Welcome to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello, everybody. To say that I have a lot to say this week would certainly be an understatement. Should we just get right into it?
Randy, you have the microphone, you have the floor, just tell us about it.
All right, so watching the game was honestly really difficult, but I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to actually pose this as a question to you. Do you think I'm wrong to not be as hysterical as the media makes our situation out to be?
Well, it depends, Randy. What is the media saying that you disagree with?
The media is acting like this one game is just going to be indicative of how Kalen DeBoer's entire tenure is going to go. It means we're completely done. We've got no chance. Yada, yada, yada. We're actually a terrible team.
No,
which, granted, our performance wasn't great, but there just seems to be a lot of sharks circling the program in the media.
I mean,
just
that's
like wanting to get their little bite in. You know what I mean?
That's the media for you. I think a lot of people, you know, use losses like this as an opportunity to make, you know, very flashy headlines and quotes. But here at the Gym Podcast, we're more about substance, you know, quality. Randy, I think that Bama is not in a great spot, but they're still in a better spot than most teams.
I would 100% agree with that. I mean, our resources are all there. Our NIL is pretty big. Mm-hmm. We have talent. I mean, our coaching scheme is totally fine. I will go ahead and guess I get into my own analysis as a fan. So obviously my perspective is a little warped. It's hard to kind of analyze your own team this way. But I will say some of the bad things I definitely noticed is that it's like our players and coaches keep trying to apologize for not being Saban. And they're still trying to live up to this pressure of being a Saban team. And they just aren't. And honestly, like, that's fine. Like, nobody's ever going to be a Saban team, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay to be a normal playoff hopeful team with duds every now and then. Like, think about the years Ohio State randomly loses by 30 to, like, Iowa or something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm already predicting that we're going to blow out a random, really decent opponent. Maybe the next one we play. Don't look up who it is, Jimbo.
Don't look it up.
Yeah. And the pendulum's going to shift wildly where everybody's going to be like, on the other extreme, wow, I can't believe why we're fooled by that game one. Look at how flawless they look. They sure fixed all their problems. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have another struggle of a game where we either lose or it's a close win versus somebody we should have no business being close against. You know what I mean? And so it's just going to be wild reaction to wild reaction week to week. And people just kind of need to take the season one game at a time, understand teams improve and regress, and given our talent and everything, I'm not going to freak out too much. I will say this, and here's what I, you know, really noticed, is that we do have a great core of players. There's like 7, 8, 10 players that are playing tough. They're playing the way they need to play. And actually, it's all of Kalen DeBoer's Washington players he brought over and his recruits that are playing that way.
Really?
It's the Saban-era players that are the ones that are really struggling mentally and being tough. And something Bama fans, you'll kind of see us talk about, is that in the last couple of years of Saban's tenure, you noticed that a lot of that intensity kind of lessened up. So I don't think this is necessarily Kalen DeBoer's fault, per se, that they kind of don't play with the same edge. Because we definitely saw, and granted, Saban was getting old. It's hard to live up to his own intensity. Mm-hmm. As for the core group of players, we have like Keon Sabb, he's a DB. LT Overton, our defensive line was okay. It's really our linebackers that were soft. Our wide receivers play like dogs. Our quarterback, Ty Simpson, he played great. He had like 255 yards and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, mm-hmm. like 55% completion or something, but he was having to play hero ball. Like Ty Simpson played great mm-hmm. when he wasn't getting blindside hit by, you know, a defensive lineman from Florida State. Our offensive line struggled, and specifically Cade and Proctor, but I mean, they'll be fine. They just have some assignment misses, but they're not, like, incapable of playing well, if that makes sense. And we saw that last year, too.
Right.
Like, a lot of the problems early we saw last year that got fixed, we're seeing early again this year. So I'm kind of seeing some shades of that. Granted, we only have one game's data point, so people are naturally going to react.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to overreact to one game. I'm going to let this play out.
I think that's reasonable. I think we should wait until, just for not just Bama, but any team, especially after week one. You know, there's a lot more games left to be played here. There were a lot of very tough matchups we saw, like Ohio State versus Texas. Obviously, you can't extrapolate too much off of one game. You know what I mean? I think the concern for me, Randy, and I brought this up to you in DMs earlier this week, is I do feel, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, it does feel like sort of that mystical allure of Bama has kind of faded away. And I think that, like, that's the most shocking thing to me, at least at this point.
I get what you're saying. Like, people no longer lose the game before it's played because we're Bama. Yeah. But then again, like, we're not a Nick Saban team anymore. Like, that should be expected. I don't know why everybody takes it as a surprise that we're not literally just Saban 2.0. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not what it's going to be. But I think on the same token, I touched on this a little bit earlier. The second we blow out a decent opponent, people are going to kind of, like, ask themselves again before they play us, like, are they the same team? Should I just, you know what I mean?
I mean, a great example of this, like, I mean, okay, I know I talk like Bama's going to win every game every week. But truly, I think there's one team, for example, that does fear Bama, and that's Georgia. I think if and when Bama
there's so much
Georgia,
pressure. The thing is, Georgia plays against us with like the same pressure and yeah. same like tightness and pressure in a bad way that we're starting to play every game like, where it's like they just losing is just such a bad look. Mm-hmm. More so than usual,
yeah.
that they play with a lot of pressure. They don't know how to, I guess, shake that feeling. They don't know how to just play loose.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they struggle with that against us because of us having their number, and they need to get over that Bama hump.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see for sure. It'll be interesting to see throughout the season. I will say, for what it's worth, Randy, again, my kind of takeaway from week one in general is that this season feels so incredibly wide open. Like, I couldn't tell you who's going to win it all this year. Do you feel the same?
No. Oh, I agree. And I think that's kind of a cool part of the new era of college football, that it is more wide open. It's probably going to be one of, like, 12, 15 teams. Mm-hmm. And it probably will be 99% of years.
But it used to be, like, one of four teams, one of three teams, you know?
Right,
it feels,
right.
like, genuinely, like, you can look... Like, even though Florida State's ranked 14 right now in the AP poll, I could see them making a deep playoff run. You know, we saw, you know, teams like, I know I'm going on the list here, like Illinois, I hate to say it, they could make a pretty good run this year. Ole Miss is 20. I think they could be a playoff team. Like, you can go pretty far down the AP poll and find teams that, like, still have yet to make a pretty big statement, but... Even beyond that.
On that note, yeah. I think it also brings up a good point. You know, you were kind of sort of getting to it, but you can absolutely now build a program to be one of those 12 teams or so.
Yes.
Like, you can build a program, and it's going to take a little bit of time to become, to go from a consistent playoff team to a consistent playoff team that can actually make a push. But, like, that opportunity is there now.
For sure. 100%. And it's why I'm devastated that my Badgers aren't in that conversation, but... Maybe someday.
Hey, you're undefeated. I mean, hey.
Undefeated. 1-0, boys. Yeah, against mighty, who do you play? Miami of Ohio.
Yep.
I will say the game on Thursday night regarding Wisconsin, Thursday night football sucks. I'll tell you that right now. It was, I think, our lowest, like, opening attendance numbers in, like, 20 years. And part of that is because we suck as a team. But a bigger part, I think, is just that, like, no one wants to go to a game at 8 o'clock on Thursday night. Like, you got to work the next day, dude, you know?
Right.
So I don't know, but it was fun being back. I'm sadly going to miss, for the second time since my freshman year of college, I'm going to miss a Wisconsin home game this coming week.
But why?
Folks, fall weddings.
Oh.
What are we doing? What are we doing, folks?
Oh.
So I'm pretty bummed about that, but what can you do?
One thing I wanted to talk about before we get into talking about last week's games is the Lee Corso final headgear pick in the final college game day.
Yeah,
it was a pretty cool moment to just see everybody kind of memorialize him before he even passed away.
Yeah,
you know, to kind of get him to be present for that. You know, he's 90 years old, mm-hmm. right? His time is running down. It is what it is. But I really like this final headgear pick. I was so hoping for a grand fake out for him to pull off the Brooders, whatever he's called, and have the longhorn headpiece. I don't even know what their mascot really wears, but yeah, that would have been great.
I mean, it was weirdly poetic. You know, it rhymed, as George Lucas would say, for him to make Brutus his last pick since it was his first. And I don't know, like, for what it's worth, like, you know my thoughts on game day these days. You certainly know my thoughts on ESPN and how I think just as a network and an institution, they've really fallen down.
Yeah.
But even that said, I was like thoroughly impressed and surprised by how like classy of a sort of outro they gave Lee Corso. Like it felt very respectful and in a way you don't see that often these days, just in sports media in general, where everything's very, right. You know, just like jokey and frat boy like. I don't know. Corso, it's obviously like it hasn't sunk in yet, man. Like I was thinking about this on Saturday, like it's gonna be weird next week not having him pick a headgear. You know? Uh-huh. Like that's when it's gonna sink in, I think, for me.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how they do it. I know they're going to have Pat McAfee try to sort of. I mean, you can't replace Corso, but Pat McAfee is so just off the
same.
The handle.
Yeah, not what we
need. He doesn't have a constrained, classy version of the craziness. He'll just like I see him like dive into the cake they put on the table like a toddler.
Yeah, I was talking to my wife about this over the weekend. Like to me, Corso is just goofy, but like that goofy is different than like obnoxious. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
And that is just obnoxious. So, not the same. Not the same.
All right. So, without further ado, I guess let's get into some of these games. But I guess we should start with the obvious at the 11 a.m. slot, which we had Texas at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start off by saying, after looking at this game and looking at our loss, I know Florida State's probably not on the same level as Ohio State, although I think they're very much improved and a legitimate playoff contender.
Definitely.
I think we're in a better position just to kind of compare than a team like Texas, because at the end of the day, at least we had good quarterback play.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a cold take at this point, but like Arch just looks really bad.
That was rough, dude.
I mean, like,
granted, hey, he could come out next game and light it up. That could be his first game jitters on the road at Ohio State. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I know it's easy to say, like, well, they were playing the number one team or whatever on the road. Like, I get that, but it's not like Arch didn't have looks. It's not like he didn't have time in the pocket. Like he just made, like his incompletions were just like confusingly
bad.
Confusingly. Like where is this? So maybe it is.
The very first play of the game was a pass to a wide open receiver that just hit the dirt, man.
It was just what is going on for like the most hyped quarterback of our lifetime.
So to be honest, it's hard to say that this was some defensive slugfest, but defensives play well. Granted, there were great defensive performances, but I could see just a lot of self-inflicted issues for both offenses.
Teams. Yeah.
I mean, granted, Ohio State got a good, great fourth down goal line stop. That was a really good defensive performance, obviously. But when you can sell out to stop the run, I know it's fourth and one, but still, you don't have to worry about Arch.
I agree. You look at the stats in this game. I mean, Ohio State had just barely 200 yards on the entire game. Like, they're not... To me, I don't think Ohio State's actually that big of a threat this year. We'll have to see, of course. Obviously, both teams can improve, but it was a pretty disappointing game for how hyped up it was going to be. Like, I think that was kind of everyone's takeaway. It was just very boring and unimpressive for both units.
Right. I guess we'll go ahead and move on to LSU 17, Clemson 10. I got to be honest, the final score does not show how much of a domination this game was.
I agree.
LSU had about 100 more total yards. They had 12 more first downs. And they had, I think, 15 minutes more time of possession. It was just straight up domination from LSU.
I agree.
I kind of don't know exactly what to make of it, but it's a little scary to watch because we got to play them.
Well, I don't know. For what it's worth, like I think Clemson is a little bit overhyped heading into this season. I think Cade Klubnik has kind of hit his ceiling in some ways, and he had a pretty miserable game against LSU. I think for what it's worth, Randy, LSU, it's going to be like living and dying by Garrett Nussmeier, their quarterback, who I now think is probably everyone's favorite, you know, Heisman contender. But he didn't strike me as like there weren't a lot of explosive plays out of him or LSU that night. And that to me is kind of the difference between like how LSU performed and how Florida State performed. Like, you need some level of like big play energy that you just really didn't get out of the Tigers, the victorious Tigers.
Right. And that's what it seems like LSU is missing. They look like they're an elite team that's definitely going to push for the playoffs if they don't outright make it. Mm-hmm. But again, they lack that big playability that you're going to have. And, you know, again, I hate to compare every team to mine. It's hard not to when we just watched this Wiz.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's one thing we did not lack was big playability.
Oh, I agree.
So it's like, yeah. I see things that look really good. It's hard to make much out of this in week one, but I do think Clemson was a bit overhyped. Garrett Nussmeier plays kind of game manager-y, which isn't a bad thing.
He's a good game manager.
But it just means... He's a good game manager. He's the best game manager quarterback you could probably hope for.
At this point, yeah. But that's usually not
enough. So if they rely on him to win games, though, he's not going to be able to do that. So they better hope they're not in a position where he has to sling it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. The other big game from this weekend that I wanted to talk about was Notre Dame at Miami. We got to talk about the elephant in the room. We got to address it. Notre Dame. What's going on? Is their season over? I mean, seriously, is it? Like, without the conference championship?
No, it's not. They already don't play for the conference championship.
But, I know, but...
I mean, they lost to NIU last year. I mean, That's true. It's going to be much harder, but their season's not over. I mean, does it have any impact on how good we think Notre Dame or bad Notre Dame is? That's what the real question is.
For me,
I think that's going to determine whether or not they make it.
They looked okay. It's weird, man, because like Notre Dame made it the national championship last year, and it wasn't even a fluke. Like, they beat Georgia to get there, right? But what's weird to me is this looked a lot like last year's Notre Dame team on offense, in the sense that like I just felt like their quarterback was like running the ball every other play, you know, and just there wasn't a lot of passing going on, and it really limited them when they fell behind.
I think it's funny that Carson Beck goes to Miami and is instantly likable.
I know. It doesn't make any
sense.
Tells
you something about a certain program down in Athens, right?
Yeah, I'd say. I honestly, he's kind of like...
And he had a great performance. That's the thing, is he had a great performance. So maybe he was actually smart to make this move. They almost blew it in the fourth quarter, because I think Notre Dame had to have, like, what, a 14-point comeback? Something like that.
Yeah.
And, hey, they almost made it happen, but Miami... appears to be the real deal. It's week one. It's hard to say. There's a lot of football left to be played. They still have to play Florida, Florida State, SMU. I mean,
I think of the
Florida,
ACC.
Florida State, the big ones.
For what it's worth, you know, we were talking about the ACC last week and how like the ACC needs to step up and have some big victors. I think Miami and Florida State made big statements this weekend. Both Miami and Florida State being good really does help just kind of the overall perception of the ACC. Like, this is going to be. You know, I think that they're kind of a little bit more legit than we maybe thought they were, just because these two teams
are. We've been talking about this. I've been talking to you about this past week, is that if anything, the ACC is really poised to become almost a quasi P2 conference, way more so than the Big 12. The Big 12 lacks like a real top elite team. They have a lot of great middle of the conference teams. They don't really have any awful teams.
Right.
But they lack that top end elite,
like a top five,
elite group of teams.
Right.
Right. Well, the ACC, like if Miami, Florida State, Clemson, even Notre Dame to half an extent, you know, if they can all be those premier programs, and they have other great programs, Virginia Tech, you know, Georgia Tech can be decent, UNC can sometimes be decent, North Carolina State can sometimes be decent. They have an opportunity to be and appear as a premier conference, especially if they can get some marquee out-of-conference matchups with the SEC. Right. Like, nobody's going to disrespect the ACC or see the name ACC and instantly have, like, a lower level of respect for their schedule or who they played.
Right, right. Yeah.
And it's going to take Florida State not actively trying to destroy the conference and the media to accomplish that. It's just so dumb.
I know.
Because they dug their own grave, like, 2 years ago. Honestly, they had something to do with that. I mean, I know they went undefeated and it was a snub, but I'm just saying they wouldn't have to worry about perception if they wouldn't be the ones actively trying to destroy their perception.
I agree. We'll see how it plays out this year. I mean, Florida State, Miami, that game is coming up in about a month. That if both those teams are undefeated heading into that game, dude, that could be fun and good for the conference. So, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. I did want to talk about one more game. I actually don't want to talk about the game I just had to make. Bill Belichick had his first ever college game with North Carolina. They got destroyed by like four touchdowns by TCU. TCU's quarterback's really great, by the way, and I'm probably going to mention him, not this week, but when we do our early Heisman, September Heisman Awards.
Sure.
He is amazing, dude. But I have to say, I think it's hilarious that North Carolina's backup quarterback is literally the same age as Bill Belichick's girlfriend.
Are you serious? Hold up.
Yep. His name is Max Johnson, and he is the same age as Jordan Hudson. See, I think that's going to help Bill Belichick because he can really relate to the players.
Yeah. That's really funny. Dude, I got to say, regarding Bill, like, honestly, it was just, like, sad and kind of hard to watch. Because, like, it's such a creepy, like, elephant in the room type thing that I feel like people like us address, but, like, ESPN that was broadcasting it, like, they just kind of gloss over how just weird everything here is. Like, am I overreacting and thinking this?
No, you're not. Because, like, dude, you're a 70-year-old man. It's objectively weird to be dating a 24-year-old model thing. Like, we know that it's a financial transaction of sorts. Obviously. I mean, you don't have anything in common with her, dude. You're not going to have deep conversations about life. You're in completely different stages of life. Like, you should be retiring to the beach and hanging out with your grandkids.
That's the thing.
Your grandkids on the beach. Are her age.
That's funny. He's on the beach, but so is she. And she's taking, like, Instagram photos of her as a mermaid. Or, you know, photos of Bill Belichick on the ground, like, lifting her up in the air, like the Titanic or something. And it's just, like, there's something about, like, the social media aspect of all of this that makes this, like, extra creepy in a way.
Right. So I guess we'll see if they even touch on it. It is weird because as much of sharks in the water as sports media can be, they are just kind of ignoring this.
I know.
And this is, like, prime clickbait material that they could just be all over.
I agree. We're covering it here in the Jim Podcast, though. The one source you can trust.
All right. Are you ready to go to next week?
Let's do it. There's some good games. What stands out to you, Randy? What are you looking forward to?
I'm going to be very interested to see Iowa at Iowa State. The name of the game. El Asico? No, it's the real name.
Oh, there's a real name to it? I literally thought it was just called El Asico.
Winner, they get the Cy-Hawk Trophy.
That's lame. Ugh. Anyways.
Yeah, the El Asico is better. Anyway, I'm going to be very interested to see this game because Iowa State's quarterback looks really good. I think it's Rocco Bet. That's it.
You're joking.
They're ranked number 16. Iowa's 1-0. They have, I think, a new offensive coordinator, and they have a new quarterback transfer coming in that lit it up at a lower level. And I'm just going to be so curious to watch this game and see what it's going to tell us about either team with Iowa's Big Ten style versus Iowa State being in the Big 12. Is it going to tell us anything about either team? Because it could launch a potential playoff hope for a team like Iowa State. But that would do so much for their program. I'm just curious.
Okay, my conundrum is Iowa State, I've got a bone to pick with them. Look at their schedule. We were just talking about, like, you know, conference perception and stuff like this. Like, I look at Iowa State's schedule in the Big 12, and I'm just like, God, like, what I'd give to have something as easy as this, dude. Like, they're going to play one ranked team the rest of the season. And
again, they play a bunch of okay teams, but not any great teams.
Mm-hmm. And these okay teams they face, like Kansas State, they barely survive. Kansas State, by the way, we got to talk about them. They barely beat North Dakota. They barely beat North Dakota 30-35. This is what I'm saying, though, dude. It's just like the Big 12, man. Like, there's no one great in the conference. And so a team like Iowa State, like, I don't even care if they win all their games, dude. Like, to me, they're not they're never going to get over that kind of, like, elite hump, you know?
Right. And it's going to be hard to, because it's one of those things where iron sharpens iron as well.
Yeah.
Where whenever you have, like, you see this in the NFL. You see this in the NFL especially, where one division of four teams gets really, really good, mm-hmm. and it forces the other teams to make certain changes, adjustments, and they themselves also want. Yep. When you have nobody really pushing, you know, the other to really have to get better, right. It's not that they're trying to not be the best that they can be, but it gives you a certain perspective on your own team and you know what to do. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to respond to who you're playing, sort of. Does that make sense?
And when you're playing Iowa as like your marquee rival every year, I mean, it's going to be ugly. It's always ugly. It's going to be sloppy. We know this. Who do you think wins this one, Randy? I think Iowa State's going to come out like with like a 3-point win on this thing.
I 100% agree. That's what I
like, a 17-13 type win, like something like, just, you know, it's always like that.
Technically, that's 4 points, but I get
technically
the idea.
Technically. I'll allow it.
Another game I actually wanted to talk about was Oklahoma State going to Oregon, because Mike Gundy actually made a comment about Oregon's players and how, you know, he basically complained about how much they spend on their players. And Dan Lanning claps back with the "we spend to win." I wanted to know your thoughts on that whole transaction, because personally, it's like, I don't want college football to be about, look at how rich we are.
I agree.
We're just better than you because we're rich.
I agree. Well, the thing is, like, Oregon's kind of been like that for decades now, right? Like, ever since Nike got involved, they've been kind of like this program that is notorious. Like the reason they're relevant is because they spend a ton of money. Before they could spend money on recruits, they were having these, you know, obscene investments in their facilities. They obviously had all this, like, Nike advertising and, like, their uniforms, right? And so, like, part of me is like, I get it. Like, that's Oregon's identity. But on the other hand, yeah, I agree with you, Randy. Like, it does suck that you can just buy a roster these days and instantly become a playoff team. Because in the past, like, a team like Oklahoma State was one of those teams that was consistently good year after year after year, but they've struggled in the NIL era. And I think it's just because they're a smaller brand. You know, they can't compete with a school in state like Oklahoma for a lot of these resources with NIL. And so, as a result, their program's kind of fallen by the wayside, and I think that's a bummer to see.
Yeah, especially in the Big 12. They would need to move to a power conference to be able to be reasonably competitive, just because of the TV payouts. It's just so vastly different.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Oregon just ditches the Pac-12 and it dies, you know? So it's I understand this frustration for sure.
Next up, I wanted to cover this one. Oh, go ahead.
I had to say, though. Okay, this is dumb. My lock of the week. I messaged you this before the podcast started. Randy, my lock of the week. I think
I'm reading it now.
Oklahoma State defeats Oregon.
Okay.
And here's why. And here's why, folks. Oregon, this season, I think the overconfidence is going to reach a critical mass at a certain point. Like, there's no more arrogant or overconfident team in college football than Oregon. And we saw last year, if you recall, in week two, think back, what almost happened in week two of last year?
Almost lost to Boise State.
Week two, home game, they're going to be thinking they're going by 30 points. Look out for Oklahoma State. All I'm going to say, folks, lock of the week. You heard it here first.
Okay. I will lock that in. I wanted to cover this game. We have South Florida playing at Florida.
Yes.
Do you think South Florida has any chance? Keep in mind, they did beat Boise State 34-7 in week one.
Dude, I actually kind of think they do. And it's because if you watch that South Florida game, they were explosive. We were just talking about this, like this whole explosive factor. South Florida seems like a team that they can at least like hang in there with Florida, I think, for three quarters. If they really like come out, you know, guns blazing and play kind of ballsy and, you know, air it out deep when they need to. They might not win, but I think they'll make it interesting. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for out of this game.
Their head coach, Alex Golish, is really good. He's building a really strong program at South Florida. And they have so many recruits in the area that might just want to play close to home that it's almost like they could be accidentally good just from that alone and accidentally have some really great teams. But he is building them to be a legitimate program.
For sure.
Florida, I think they're poised to have a better year, and they kind of pulled it together at the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be so curious because this game is going to be such a big deal for both programs.
Yeah, does Florida still have that like 5-star quarterback, DJ? Yeah, DJ Legway. He's still there.
Yep.
Should be fun to see. I'm rooting for South Florida, of course. But yeah.
All right. So next up, I wanted to slightly a little bit. Arizona State, number 12, going to Starkville, Mississippi State. Do you have any thoughts on this game?
I'm going to say it, dude. I'm... This is one of the rare times where I'm rooting for the SEC team in a non-conference matchup. I'm serious, dude. I really hate that. Arizona State story. Arizona State story was cool last year, I admit, but like they don't strike me as being able to sort of recreate that magic this year. And I think them being ranked 12 is a little bit high. Mississippi State too, for what it's worth, like I think that this is the kind of team that is very capable in terms of talent, certainly, of taking down a team like Arizona State. I know Mississippi State sucks, but like they're still the SEC school. Right, they still have plenty of talent to be able to compete with probably most teams in the nation. And so I got a good feeling for the Bulldogs in this one.
I think the fact that it's at home does bode well for them.
Yeah.
I would honestly, they're not going to be my lock of the week. That's going to be another team in a second.
Okay.
But I do think Mississippi State actually comes out victorious.
Yeah, I think so too.
Now to move on to my lock of the week.
What could it be?
We have number 15, Michigan, playing at number 18, Oklahoma. My lock of the week is Oklahoma wins this game.
Yeah, I agree. Is that a hot take?
Yeah, okay.
Nothing has to be. But
I guess it's not that much of a hot take when you really think about it. I know Michigan has like some $12 billion quarterback or whatever, but he's a true freshman. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma has John Mateer. He played well last week. I know they actually struggled starting out, but I mean, it's week one.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, a lot of teams are going to take their week one G5.
Michigan had a pretty lackluster showing against New Mexico last week. They only won 34-17. And so, I don't know, Oklahoma, I think that this is a program, like, what, is this year four for Brent and Vegetables? Year five?
I think it's year three, year four, something around that line.
It's to the point where, like, I think certainly the fans of Oklahoma, I'm sure Koss can attest to this, the fans are expecting them to win games like this, right? They might not be able to take down Texas or Bama later on in the season, but like, well, they took down Bama last year. So like, we know they have the potential, right? They should win a game like this at home. And so I think, I agree with you. I think Oklahoma's going to win this one. In fact, I don't think it's going to be that close, if I'm being real. I think Michigan's not that great of a team this year.
I 100% agree. I think Sharon Moore is just a dead man walking.
He's
just a placeholder.
Yeah.
He's a placeholder guy.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma, I think they are going to build something a little more special this year.
And they
have a really tough schedule.
They need to win games because, dude, their schedule gets brutal in the second half of this year. So
yes,
win these games now.
But they played like last year. They have a tough team. You know, they're going to play hard, and I think that's what it's going to come down to. I think that. Plus, they actually have a quarterback. I mean, Jackson Arnold did beat us last year, but. Yeah. To be fair, for whatever reason, our defensive scheme is just so awful against running quarterbacks.
Yeah, secret.
Secret. I did actually want to talk about, this is actually the last game, the last ranked game of the evening at 6:45 p.m. my time, is Alabama versus Louisiana Monroe. If you remember, Saban lost to ULM in his very first year.
Of course.
But the reason I wanted to talk about this game is because I have a feeling Kalen DeBoer seems like the type of coach, he very much has circle games that he looks at, and he has a tendency to overlook other teams. I have a feeling, this is my prediction for how this game's going to play out, is we're going to, again, it's going to look way more struggling than it actually is, and people are going to, again, use that as an excuse, not an excuse, but a reason to really be a tad hysterical to the reaction of our team.
Sure.
But I could see is not necessarily having the best game, but just kind of winning anyway by like three, four touchdowns.
I think you're going to win this. Like, come on. They're going to have a bounce back game, dude. They're going to be motivated. I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah.
I think our bounce back game is going to be the week after. Like, I'm not trying to like stir anything. I'm really not trying to like stir anything up for the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really know, like, I have a tendency. The teams that struggle against us the most are teams that just try to play straight up football without any gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
And Wisconsin is the epitome of that team. And
we have
so much to prove. Because, like, no matter what we do against, it means nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But against Wisconsin the week after, we're going to have so much to prove.
Right. Especially before the Georgia game. I get that. I get that. But even then, like, I mean, Bama's going to win this by like 49-0. Like, it won't be like 70-0, but it'll be a blowout. It'll be a blowout, Rand. Don't you worry. That's my second lock of the week.
Okay.
Other than that, I'm just looking down the schedule here if we missed anything. I guess the only
kind of a weak schedule this
it's a
week.
It's a week two, folks. It's a week two. The only other game I wanted to talk about just real quick here to end on, perhaps, Vanderbilt versus Virginia Tech.
Ooh.
What do you think, Randy? We were just talking about Virginia Tech. Is this perhaps an opportunity to bounce back after their humiliating loss to South Carolina last week?
It very well could be. It's hard to determine how much of Vandy last year was lightning in a bottle because it's different whenever people aren't aware of what you're capable of when you're a known bottom feeder of a program.
That's true.
Like they got, I'll just be honest, they were able to get us because we completely overlooked them. And it was the week after the Georgia game.
Yeah.
And I remember even looking after the game, like just looking at raw stats, we would have had a 99% win probability.
Yep.
Just like based on how the stats of the game went. So it's one of those things. Now people know about Vandy, know that. Right. So I think for that reason, Virginia Tech's going to take the game very, very seriously and really want to prove something.
Even then, though,
and I don't think that bodes well for Vandy because, again, I think last year could be lightning in a bottle.
Diego Pavia, though,
be able to recreate.
Pavia, for what it's worth, against Charleston Southern, the mighty Buccaneers, he had a pretty good game. 275 passing yards, 3 TDs. So, I don't know. They'll be a fun team to watch this year for sure. I think Vanderbilt is kind of like everyone's big question mark in the SEC. Can they repeat the success of last year? And I think this game will give us a pretty good indication of whether or not that's possible.
Very true.
All right. Anything else, Randy?
I honestly believe that's all we have. Like, there's just not a whole lot to talk about. I know... Let's see. UCLA plays UNLV. I think this could be an upset.
Oh.
UCLA plays at UNLV. UNLV is 2-0 because they had the week zero game. UCLA has Nico Iamaleava.
Oh my God, dude.
And he played awful versus Utah. Terrible. So I could see this being an upset. And UNLV is building up a good program.
Oh, I agree. Actually, it's funny. I'm looking at ESPN right now. You know, these are all just like dumb stats nerd stuff, but the matchup predictor on ESPN. Gives UNLV
actually has UNLV a 75% chance of winning.
Yeah,
okay.
Like what? That's just, dude.
Okay, so that's not an upset at all by any means. Okay,
no, yeah, they're that bad. So I agree. Actually, that'd be a fun like hate watch, wouldn't it? Like if you just want to like laugh at.
Oh, it's going to be a great hate watch, but I'm going to be at the Bama game. So
yeah, that's true. Well, keep an eye on the score on that one. That'd be a fun one to watch his stat line. Randy, have fun at the Bama game this weekend. Folks, pray for me as I am not watching the Wisconsin game at Camp Randall. I'll be there in spirit, of course. But until then, folks, thank you all for listening to the Jim Podcast. It's been fun. And as always, folks, high tide
for Wisconsin.